On a boat in the middle of a river is a great place to get to know someone. Those words were written by Alexander Watson, author of the new book, River Queens, Saucy Boat, Stout Mates, Spotted Dog America. In addition to being a writer, Mr. Watson is a landlord who has renovated derelict rental properties into Class A apartments and the self-described deckhand aboard the 45-foot-long 1955 Chris Craft motor yacht, Betty Jane. He swabs the decks and shines the brass. He's also the painter, plumber, and carpenter, and adventurer. In 2008, he made a spur-of-the-moment decision that led him to pursue a life on the river. Good evening for Around Cincinnati. I'm Elaine Deal. In the studio is Alexander Watson. Welcome, Captain Watson.
Thank you very much. But I'm primarily deckhand. Dale Harris, my partner, is the captain. But that's about to change because I have started taking maneuvering lessons, and yesterday I landed the boat successfully, no touch in the slip, and I was very impressed with myself.
Alexander, River Queens is a real-life journey of two gay men who, on a whim, walked into a boat show one day and ended up buying a boat. Take us back to that moment when you knew that you had to have that 1955 boat, then called The King and I.
Yes, ma'am. It was a horrible night. It was a horrible February night. It was icy. It was cold. It was Texas, and that's winter in Texas, icy and cold. Dale and I had gone to Alvord, Texas, which is between Fort Worth and Wichita Falls, to satisfy a millwork order we needed for a renovation. And while we were outside the Metroplex, we had decided to schedule a viewing of this boat, which we had seen at the Dallas Boat Show. The weather was getting progressively nasty. We called the one sole person who was at the marina to watch over the place while the rest of the staff was at the Dallas Boat Show and asked if we could cancel the appointment because the roads were icing. And he said, oh, no, as long as you're on the way, you might as well come. And so there was this huge ordeal because this was before cell phones. Dale and I would drive to the next town, run out, get hot chocolate and make a payphone call. And we would call and say, we're at this point and the weather's nasty. And he would say, oh, no, come on. And so we did, and we got there exactly at 5 o'clock, and we arrived at a marina which was empty because it was the dead of winter. And there was this one little light in the marina office that was the only welcome we had. And so Dale and I go, and we timidly tap on the glass, right? And here comes this man we've never seen before. He steps outside. He has his galoshes, and he says, well, it's a hell of a day to look at a boat. And it was because it was February. The sun was down. It was ice. It was rain, so forth. We go to the boathouse where this boat was. It was the last boathouse, and the road is a serpentine piece of blacktop that hugs the lake shore. My attitude's getting worse and worse because I really am not going to buy a boat, and I think that I'm feeling badly because I think I'm leading people on, that I'm going to look at this and buy this boat, and we are not going to buy this boat. It was simply a curiosity, which was a wonderful idea on a beautiful sunny afternoon. But this was a horrible February night. And we finally stop, and this is all in the book. And Joe says, okay, here we are. And I look out the window, and I don't see anything. I see Black Lake. And he says, here we are. We get out. And at the bottom of the bluff is this nasty-looking boathouse, which is actually the boathouse where boats go to die. And because Joe is the accountant, he fumbles with the keys, so we can't get in the gate. We can't get into the slip where the boat is. We can't get in. And finally, we kind of just bust in. And when we bust into a derelict boathouse full of derelict boats and all of the detritus that comes with boating that's been neglected over months and weeks. And Dale and I jump one slip after another until finally we get to the slip right before the King and I. And all we see of her is her prow come out of the water from the front, the bow, comes out of the water and swoops back in the signature dolphin nose that was signature to Chris Craft in 1950s. And it was years later before the two of us admitted to a third party in relating this story that both of our hearts jumped in our chest and we did not even know what we were looking at. So at that moment, and we weren't going to admit it to each other because then we would have showed our hand, right? And so we didn't talk about it for 6 days. And finally, I had to come to Jesus meeting with Dale and said, we have got to talk about this because we have to give these people an answer as to whether we're even interested or not. And one thing led to another, and now we have a 45-foot wooden boat in Cincinnati, Ohio.
And her name is now Betty Jane.
Betty Jane.
Why?
I thought that a double name was important because I'm from the South. My dog was Doris Fay, and so my boat's going to be a double name. We decided Betty Jane because it was a typically 50s sort of name. As it turns out, Dale's mother is Elizabeth Jane. Now, she never went by Betty Jane. She always went by Betty. She was one of those taciturn Wisconsin farm wives who had been transplanted against her will to the deepest heart of Texas to follow her husband and bring her family so they could have work. But she was always a Wisconsinite, always. She was from Milton, which is a little bitty town by Janesville in the southeast corner of the state. And she really didn't understand the extravagance of a motor yacht, much less a wooden one, or why we were sinking tons of money into restoring her, because it really bothered her we didn't have J-O-B jobs, you know, that we were investors, and that she really kind of liked a W-2. So we told her that we had named the boat after her, of course. And there's this wonderful, fabulous picture of Dale's mother at the stern of the boat looking at her name inscribed on the transom, and she's just full of pride.
Is Betty Jane still running?
Betty Jane is still running. She is in Indiana, and we use Washington Marine as our shipyard, and they are very careful to make sure that our engines are running and that our genset is running and that our mechanicals are all in perfect working order when we leave the shipyard. Now, when we get down to Indiana, Dale is in charge of all of that. Dale's persnickety about that. Dale is like I am about bright work, about varnish work. Dale feels that if we have it, it's going to work properly. And for the last 2 months, the genset has not worked properly, and we're just about to get that fixed, and I'm really relieved.
You could not have done this without Dale.
Oh, my goodness, no, not at all. It is quite common for people to buy old boats, not necessarily wood boats, but old boats, and think that they're going to restore them because older boats are inexpensive to buy. The restorations are expensive, but they're inexpensive to acquire, and there are lots of opportunities to get one for free. Dale and my talent sets, skill sets, interlace. They don't overlap, which is really quite wonderful because we are never both the expert on one single project, and so we don't have to get into arguments about how we're going to approach a problem. But more than that, the emotional strain of restoring anything, whether it's a house, a car, a boat, the emotional strain and the frustration that comes with that project has to have emotional support from another party. And it's sometimes it is so simple as, what do the instructions say? Or in my case, I can't get a plumbing problem solved, and Dale will very kindly, very innocently say, is the valve open? And I have to tell you, Elaine, that, you know, after a long day of slogging it out, you overlook these little details.
Yeah, sometimes the valve isn't open.
And the valve isn't open. And then there's also the cavalry comes in and says, I think we should stop and have a sandwich.
My guest is Alexander Watson, whose new book, River Queens, is about two gay men in a boat, but it isn't a book about being gay. That's simply part of who you are, part of your journey. And you ran into some very interesting characters along your journey. Name just one or two of them.
John Bartlett. There's a whole chapter devoted to John Bartlett called John Bartlett as I Live and Breathe, because John Bartlett was a Cajun river rat. If you know Louisiana at all, you understand that Cajun is an entire mindset unto its own that is terribly foreign from big city Dallas, Texas. And a river rat besides. John's motto, what he boated by, was always out on two, back on one, which meant that he never really relied on both engines operating properly during the entire cruise. Because most of the time they were put together with baling wire and bubble gum, and so a failure was inevitable. So when he launched on a trip, he would go out on two, but he always came back on one. And John was instrumental in giving us some heads up about some navigational details because he had run all the rivers we were going to run. And so there were things about those rivers he specifically wanted us to know. And the marvelous thing about John was that no matter where John was, he had an imaginary helm available. So if John were going to give you instructions on how to land or how to dock or how to approach a lock, he would stand up and his wheel was right in front of his gut. And if he instructed you to come about, then he would jump and come about, and then he would have his imaginary wheel at his gut. So it was not only educational, but it gave us a preview as to what we might encounter on the river. The other one was Alan Carpenter. Alan got us from Texoma, Texas, where we had Betty Jane, to Applegate Cove, and Alan was the marina operator as well as the boat transporter. He was desperate for our business because it was 2008, and he did not necessarily know that the big crash was coming. But he could kind of sense that we were going to be the customer that summer. Alan was one of those make-do kinds of guys, and he had to be because Sallisaw, Oklahoma is on the eastern edge of the state, right west of Fort Smith on I-40, and there really is nothing out there except Indian reservations. And so what we had gotten used to in Texas was an expertise and a chain of supply that just took a snap of a finger. You just placed a call and it happened. That was not so in Salisaw, because in Salisaw, and specifically Applegate Cove, a ballpoint pen was special order and overnight delivery was 1 week. So we had to make do a lot, and Alan was a champion at making do. Unfortunately, he died halfway through the summer and we weren't quite ready to go yet. And so we had to make do without Alan. And that postponed our launch until October.
There's also some very strong, smart women in the book.
There are. Rhoda Carpenter, Alan's wife, was a brick because Alan was dying of metastasized colon cancer, which is ugly. She took care of him and took care of the marina and took care of us. Kara Bartlett, John's wife, was a tattoo artist. To be married to John Bartlett, you have to have a lot of spunk. But she particularly was one of those tattoo artists that was so conscientious about her art that she made all her own inks, which I had never heard of before. More importantly than that was Vicky, who was at Paris Landing, Tennessee. We met Vicky in total desperation. Dale's father was dying, and we had to stash Betty Jane in a secure, covered location. And when we got the news that we needed to be back in Dallas, we were not in a secure location, and so we were desperate. And it just happened that a few miles downstream, there was Paris Landing, Tennessee, Paris Landing Marina, and it was being manned by Vicky, who was approaching 50, had been married and divorced, and was really fine to not have to deal with men's guff. And she worked in a marina and managed it beautifully. The grace and hospitality of Vicky was that she understood that we were in desperate straits because we didn't have a car. We had to go fetch our car. We had to go pack our stuff. We had to drive about 600 miles to Dallas. But she was the one that was always there with the hot cup of coffee and the powdered donuts, pressing the donuts in our hand and saying, now go take care of what you need to go take care of, and we'll take care of your boat. Don't worry about your boat. That was a great relief because we have an asset in one place and we have a dying parent in another, and you're torn. And so Vicky was terribly instrumental in making that part of the trip, which actually became a 6-week delay because Dale's father did in fact die. And so we have to stop and go bury Dad and so forth. So she was remarkable. And we met people like that everywhere we went.
As a landlubber, it really made me feel like I was on the river and that this is a different culture. That there are people on the river who are happy to give, as you like to quote the lyric from Proud Mary.
Yes.
And all kinds of shapes, colors, sizes, some nice, some not so nice, but you learn, you continue to learn on this journey. There's also a glossary in the book, which I, again, as a landlubber, particularly appreciated. We toss around the phrase wooden boat, but when you really think about it, there aren't a lot of wooden boats floating around on the water. Can you briefly describe the process of putting a wooden boat into the water?
The process of launching a wooden boat is the most exhilarating and nerve-wracking part of launching or owning a wooden boat. When a wooden boat is out on the hard, it is out of the water, and therefore it dries out. The planks dry out, and when the planks dry out, they shrink. And when they shrink, the gaps between the planks expand. There is a product called caulking, which you put in between those planks, and that it's chinking is what it is. And it does not stop the water from rushing in when you put the boat back in the water, but it does slow it down. Regardless, at Washington Marine, there are two ways to launch a wooden any boat. One is to put the boat in slings and lower it in the water, and it's still supported by the slings. Washington Marine doesn't do it that way because Craig Croyell, who is the owner-operator and takes care of Betty Jane, says, when you do that, it messes up your chines, meaning it messes up your framework and causes even more problems. And we have chine repair from straps that we've been taking care of for months. The other way to do it is to just go in trial by fire, is to launch her off of a trailer like you would any trailerable boat. This one's not trailerable, but it's on a trailer at Washington Marine, and it goes down the ramp like they all do, and we just splash it. And when it splashes, the water comes rushing in through those open chinks.
Into your boat.
Into the bilge of my boat. And Dale and I have almost lost Betty Jane twice because we didn't launch her correctly or we didn't have the proper pumps available at the proper time. I have to tell you that both of those times, there was nothing I could do. And so I had to say to myself, well, this has been a great ride, but she's going to the bottom. In both cases, the pump ex machina appears and all was saved. The reason it's nerve-wracking is because it is like a colicky baby in the middle of the night. You can do nothing about it. And so the water rushes in and you have this 2-inch pump that is gasoline fired that's on the dock. It's a fire pump. And it just draws water out of the boat as fast as it can and discharges it onto the dock and back into the river. The interesting thing about that pump, though, is that sometimes it stalls. And this is your boat's lifeline. This is what keeps it afloat. And it stalls. And then one of us has to scramble out of the boat and we say things that we oughtn't. And we pull the ripcord and we jiggle this and it starts up miraculously again and the water goes out of the boat. The fascinating thing about it is that, and every wooden boater says this, about 6 hours in, the water starts slowing down and starts mitigating. And then the pumps that are on board that are part of our regular equipment can take over and keep the boat afloat. And we launched in the middle of June this year, and Betty Jane still isn't tight and probably won't be tight until after the spring because it just takes that long for two things to happen, the planks to swell up and for the frame, which has been on jacks over the winter, distorts the frame. And so the frame has to get used to being in the water again.
Alexander, you're participating in the Antique and Classic Boat Society's 2019 International Show in a couple of weeks. You'll also be back in Cincinnati for Books by the Banks. Why did you decide to write a book?
I didn't really ever have a plan to write a book. Our friends in Texas thought that we had lost our minds when we bought Betty Jane because it was something we had never done before. And they knew us as landlords and they knew us for renovating property. But a boat is an entirely different thing, starting with that the water is on the bottom rather than on the top. You know, a house, the water comes on the roof. In a boat, the water comes in the basement. But as we went on the river, our friends asked us to please keep us posted. And I think they were really most interested in our mental health than anything else. And as we went down the river, as we met people, they said, please keep us posted. And so we had a list of about 100 people that we sent periodic emails to saying, we're delayed again, we're delayed again, we're delayed again. And I had those emails as notes. And at the end of the trip, our friend said, you really ought to write a book. Well, you really ought to write a book because you can write a pretty email. Is like you really ought to open a restaurant because you could set a pretty table. They are so dissimilar. And so I procrastinated for 7 years. And finally, it was one of those things like you need to do this just to get it off your desk, just to get it off your mind. You need to do this. And the turning point for me was when I hired a professional editor, John Baskin, at Orange Fraser Press in Wilmington, Ohio, because John could see the story that I could not see. And John's most severe edit through the entire process was on one particular chapter, I don't think we can do this. And he listed 6 questions that the passage in question asked but did not answer. And so I took a month to rewrite that with the idea that this is either going to make the book or it's not, but it will have satisfied me. John just very carefully paced me through that book, and it took us 2 years until it was a publishable book.
Storytelling is integral to river culture. Alexander Watson reflects towards the end of his adventure on the America that he and his husband Dale Harris met along the way. It was not the America of angst and fear. It was the America that explored the New World and settled the West and gathered its great diversity into one united force whenever the homeland was threatened. It was the America from which we hope to never fully return. Have you returned?
You cannot return from that experience. You cannot return from being treated for cancer. You're cured. But you cannot return to who you were prior to that treatment. This is a similar kind of altering process because I knew so little being a city kid, a city slicker from Dallas, Texas. That's all I really knew. And we launched out thinking that it was going to be a summer trip, and it turned out to be a 15-month odyssey. And I cannot tell you how many times Dale and I really kind of recognized that it was a spiritual journey, that we had done this for reasons that we did not know about at the time. And what it gave me was a wonderful appreciation for how diverse our country really is. Yet we are all very much alike. On the river, we all need fresh water. We all need food. We all need our meds. And we all need a little bit of company at the end of the day. And on the river, there is no place for disharmony, because we absolutely depend on each other inherently for our safety and progress. And so the river is a community. It is a hostile environment. I can't breathe underwater. So if anything happens that I need help, the help is going to necessarily come from somebody I don't really know or have never met. So there's one part where I get testy and Dale says to me, let's remember that one person, one moment they may be snots and the next moment they're going to be your rescue. And that was kind of the pervading attitude on the river. And if you have to live with that for 15 months because you can't stop, you're on the river, you just change. Just like with radiation, you just change.
On a boat in the middle of a river is a great place to get to know someone, including oneself, it would seem. We've been visiting with Alexander Watson, wooden boat owner and writer. His new book is River Queens, Saucy Boat, Stout Mates, Spotted Dog America, available now on Orange Fraser Press. For a link to the book and Alexander's blog, visit our website, wvxu.org. Alexander, thank you so much for visiting.
It's been a wonderful conversation. Thank you very much.
For WVXU, I'm Elaine Deal.